ultimately, a lot of Bowlero's procurement has been built up over 27 years. Whereas, you know, I came in and I saw an opportunity to sort of consolidate all of our purchasing, all of our sort of expenses that, frankly, a few percentage points here, a few percentage points there add up to millions of dollars.
This is Smarter Sourcing, a show dedicated to helping sourcing and procurement leaders elevate their influence and get their seat at the table. Our mission is to empower listeners to reimagine their roles and make that happen. In each episode, we'll speak with an innovative leader to distill best practices, learn from their mistakes, and leave you with actionable insights that you can immediately put to work. Here's your host, executive producer for Smarter Sourcing, John Pavia. Now let's jump right into today's episode.
So I'd like to welcome everybody back to this edition of Smarter Sourcing. My name is John Pavia, and this week we are joined by, I think, probably the only person in the history of the world who's gone from being the CFO of one of the major hospitality and gaming organizations in the world to being the CFO of the largest bowling venue entertainment centers in the world, Bobby Labin. And so, Bobby, thanks for joining us. And as I was doing the lead-in right there, how do you describe Bowlero? Because it's so much more than just bowling alleys. I mean, they're amazing facilities.
Yeah, I mean, Bowlero is one of the world's premier location-based entertainment companies. So if you think about people commute to come to one of our locations where bowling is our lead-in mousetrap, but we offer more than just bowling. We offer flagship arcades, premium food, really a place where you can come with your family or for date night and meet with your friends and entertain for the night.
So before we get into everything that goes into operating 350 locations, I think, somewhere right there, I first want to go into your background because it's an incredible, I was going through your history, your career path. How do you go from UPenn to Blackstone and SAC Capital to now being the CFO of the largest operator of bowling venues and entertainment centers?
Yeah, I started investment banking and quickly went from sell side to buy side, joined a hedge fund, and did investing in businesses from the outside for 10 years. And then after 10 years of doing that, I got the opportunity to become the CFO of a small cap publicly traded company. And I jumped at it because I've always been a curious person, and the opportunity to go from being on the outside understanding the numbers to the inside understanding the numbers was just an exciting jump for me.
I remember sitting back in law school and thinking to myself, you know, as I was sitting there late at night in the library and thinking about the dream jobs I'd want down the road and the different things I might be doing. When you were sitting there at UPenn thinking about your future, did you ever envision you'd be the CFO of a venue or a company that runs bowling venues across the country? Where was that on the list of possibilities for you?
I was social chair my fraternity sophomore year. So I always have liked to entertain. I hold big dinner parties at my house. So I've always found being social to be exciting and just a way to express yourself. And, you know, did I think I'd be the CFO of a 350 location based family entertainment company? Probably not, right? But I definitely, it's not surprising to me that I'm helping support one of the biggest family entertainment companies in the world.
And was that part of the nexus? I mean, you came from Bally's, which is gaming entertainment. It's got everything. And you know, I don't want to go into what led to the leap over to Bowlero, but was that part of it that you understood you had some background in entertainment and it led to you were able to see the vision that Tom Shannon had with Bowlero?
Yeah, I mean, gambling is entertainment at its root, but gambling has very specific demos. It's not something you can really do with your family. It's very individualized. Versus recently I've had two kids and the ability to get into a business that goes from 5 to 85, kind of excited. So when I was approached with the opportunity to join Bowlero, I was really excited about the potential to take the business to the next level, which is really building a business that already was the 800 pound gorilla in the space and just going further.
Yeah, it really is the 800 pound gorilla because I think everybody, at least in the U.S., thinks to themselves growing up, there was an AMF or a Lucky Strike or a Brunswick down either in their town or nearby, and that's where you went bowling. And you guys have gobbled up all of them. And
now we own all three.
You own all three, and there's you, and then I think, who's the next biggest after you guys?
Yeah, Main Event has 50 centers. We have 350. So if you're going bowling in California, New York, Connecticut, Florida, and really in 36 states in this country, you're most likely going to a Bowlero.
So I think I told you just last week, we had a family get together. And at the last minute, we said, what do you want to do tonight? Last Friday night, and we went to a Bowlero. It is an incredible experience because it's so much more than bowling. I mean, it's great music, videos going, food and beverage. All my kids are of age now, so they ring up the bill on the liquor. And then after that, we went over to the arcade. And you're right, you've got people there from 80 down to 5 years old. It was amazing. And but I was thinking about how do you maintain that brand experience from one Bowlero to the next?
You know, if you just go to arcades, like arcades are not like, let me play a crane machine and win some plush doll. Like we've got games that I sat in there for hours and they're very competitive. We have a game that how many of the red balls can you drop in the bucket in 30 seconds? And so you can see a family just sitting there competing with themselves. My three-year-old, which I hope doesn't pretend where she's going to be when she gets to college, loves the fake beer pong game. But it's a game that are, it's not just about like redemption tickets. It's about fun, competitive, got the racing cars where dad can race against his kid. And it's just exciting how these kids are really targeted towards, again, the secular trend that people want competitive, active things in their lives.
So my favorite one was to see a Hungry Hungry Hippo game that you actually sit on the hippo. I don't know if you have them at every one of them, but they have them in Norwalk, Connecticut. We were, not only was it a blast, we couldn't stop laughing. It was great. I want to get into the sourcing and procurement aspect of this, but in getting into it, you needed to get in there and start understanding the business. So when you start making the transition, I have a friend that went over to Dish Network and he was at a big bank in New York. And for the first like 3 weeks, he was in a truck doing installations. He was at the call center taking customer service calls. He's doing a lot of stuff that had nothing to do with his day-to-day job. But what did you do to prepare yourself to go into Bowlero?
Yeah. So before I started, I took my, at the time she was 2.5, to our Bolero in Doral, which is near Miami. And I just watched her eyes while she, you know, we have these ramps that are for kids and she would pick up the 8-pound ball, put it on the ramp, push it down, pick up the ball, put it on the ramp, push it down. I didn't like it when she stuck her head in the ball return, but ultimately her enjoyment really pushed me over that this was something that I could really get excited about. Once I joined, we have 350 centers. I've been to 50. I've worked in a few of them. And I like to roll up my sleeves. So, you know, I got behind the counter, learned about a lot of the efficiencies that Tom has created in the way that the customer flow happens. If you think about a bowling center or a lot of people come in at 6 p.m., 7 p.m. on Friday, Saturday night. So you need to have the customer flow. We have ropes to direct traffic and things like that. So it's understanding the dynamics of the business, going in and seeing it. 9 a.m., you've got seniors who come in and bowl, right? And so it's finding that balance of how we schedule personnel in and out of the system. You know, I participated in it for a few weeks.
Yeah, and I want to get more into that. But before we do that, I think it's important to at least go back for a second in the history because Tom Shannon, the founder and CEO, and the vision he had for Bowlero and how to inject what was your father's Friday Night Bowling League, that experience and totally transform that. And then in addition, bring sort of new disciplines to the business to really improve the business. It's incredible. I want you to talk about that for a second. And also it shows up in the numbers and you guys, you're just reported an incredible quarter and you're on the list of a bunch of, you watch CNBC and Bowlero's stock is on a lot of analyst lists of stocks to watch in 2024. So tell us about all the efficiencies, the vision and whatnot that he's brought to it and why your stock's doing so well.
Yeah, I mean, after Tom Shannon, who's the founder, chairman, CEO of Bowlero, after business school, moved to New York, and there was a very famous bowling alley in Union Square. He went into it in 1997, and bright lights, hot dog, wiener roller for food, not an exciting place, but it was still a bowling alley. And he decided to buy it. He bought it, and really, he spent the next 15 years perfecting the experience, right? Mood lighting, good food, great bar, loud music, bright TV wall, which plays music videos on Friday night, plays football on Sunday night. And the experience became one of the hottest locations to be in New York until it closed. And it closed because the landlord wanted to take the building down. But ultimately, at its peak, it went from $1 million of revenue in 1997 to $15 million because people wanted to be there, right? And it was one of those experiences. I went to it when I was an intern in New York, and frankly, when I lived in New York from 2004 to come in 2015.
It's an amazing story. So let's get into your job, your day-to-day role, and what a week working at Bowlero as a CFO is like, and especially with respect to sourcing and procurement. You have so much going on at a Bowlero. The bowling, obviously, but you just went through it. The lighting, food and beverage, the entertainment center with the arcades. There's a lot to keep track of, and I can't even imagine how many different vendors you're dealing with. So first of all, how are you structured, and how do you play air traffic controller as the CFO to make sure that everybody's now falling in line with the structure that you want and the guidelines you have?
Yeah, so my EBITDA margins are in the 50s, right? 25% of my revenue is payroll, but the other 25% is really things that I procure in masses: food, electricity, security services. These are all things that really require sort of a robust procurement system. And ultimately, a lot of Bowlero's procurement has been built up over 27 years. Whereas I came in and I saw an opportunity to sort of consolidate all of our purchasing, all of our expenses that, frankly, a few percentage points here, a few percentage points there add up to millions of dollars.
So when we think about the structure organization and working with your sourcing and procurement people, what are you telling them and what do you think is important for them to know and how to align the sourcing and procurement strategy and what they're doing in their daily jobs with the company's overall strategy?
Yeah, the strategy that I've always tried to instill into my teams, and it's been very powerful, is they have to think about every dollar out of the business as if it was their own. Right. It's super important to make it so I know people work hard. I care that they work hard, but there's only so many hours in the day. At the end of the day, you pull them back and you say, would you spend this dollar if it was your money? And the second that they believe that and they're incentivized appropriately to that, they will find savings everywhere.
That's great. And how are you structured in terms of the finance versus sourcing and procurement? I mean, is it all... how big is your group and is it centralized, decentralized?
Yeah, so our procurement today is decentralized. So IT buys for IT, loss prevention buys for loss prevention, F&B buys for F&B, and our big one is capital buys for capital, right? And so ultimately, we want to bring it all together so we have one robust buying platform that ultimately allows us to analyze every dollar going out of the business. Every dollar we spend both on the capital side and on the expense side, there should be a justification, a return, and a constant grind to bring it down.
And what's your biggest challenge right now in trying to do that and trying to get there? Is it culture? Is it getting people to do things differently? Or is it just technology?
I think technology is a big focus. Investing in systems, when you have to balance investing in systems or building a new bowling center, right? Like the bowling center has significant 30, 40% returns versus investing in technology. Sometimes technology has always been viewed as a cost center, not as an efficiency driver. And so that's something that we've been working on for the past few years and something that I was brought in to accelerate.
Interesting. What keeps you up at night? I have a friend who works at Starbucks and they said what's something that people wouldn't normally think of is that thing that, oh my God, we're always struggling to make sure every Starbucks has this. And it was the base of the Frappuccino base. For whatever reason, they have trouble making sure that every Starbucks is supplied with the right amount. What, in your world, what are those things that keep you up at night?
I'm very concerned about the control that the technology companies have over their pricing. We're in a world where you install ERP or you install your POS, you spend millions, if not tens of millions, putting it in, and they can just change pricing. Like, obviously, we have power to negotiate pricing up front, but what happens at the end of the five-year contract? So a lot of the pricing and technology right now is probably my biggest concern as a CFO.
And when you draw back on your experiences that you've had up to this point, which one translates the best? Like, which one do you go back to and said, the method I used back here at where one of your former jobs, I'm going to deploy it here in that strategy because I think it'll work the best.
Yeah. Turning Point Brands, which was a big success. We did zero-based budgeting the second year I was there and everything was built up. Every dollar had to be justified and we're doing the same at Bowlero.
And so when it comes to your vendor population, What does it take to be a supplier to Bowlero in addition to great price and whatnot? And then how do you maintain sort of discipline and relationships with your vendors?
We've been around for 27 years. A lot of our vendors have been with us for 27 years. So I think that relationship and scalability has always been the priority over price. We care about quality. So we're not going to skimp because people come into our centers and it's all about the premium product, but we need to keep them honest. And so we are looking at opportunities to bid out more projects. And that ultimately will be doing that efficiently is sort of the key to scaling it.
So how do you guys keep ahead of the trends now? Because you are an entertainment venue that is much more than just bowling. And how do you keep it fresh? And my other question is, as the CFO, now at this point in your career, do you have a place at the table in talking about strategy and where do you go from here?
Yeah, I'm at the table. So
that's got to be fun.
The key is right now is technology. So generally, the family entertainment business has been behind restaurants and personalization of what we offer you. And so ultimately, you walk in my centers, we know who you are. We know that you ordered a 16-inch pepperoni pizza last time with Miller beer, right? And so the server comes up to you and be like, you want the same thing as last time? That is a very different offer, right? Than if you walked in today where a server, maybe they remember you, but they don't have some sort of technology that tells them who you are and what you ordered last time. And that personalization is the next frontier of entertainment. And that just excites me because you think about Netflix. Why has Netflix been so successful? Because it's like it personalizes what they show you. You should watch. So you always feel like there's something to watch. You're not scrambling to find something. You come into our centers, we will personalize it for you. We will send you an email a week before your kid's birthday and say, hey, bring in Emma for her fourth birthday. And here's a $5 game card. That game card costs us nothing. Right. And so that ability to pull you in via technology will be very powerful for the family entertainment.
And that personalization is huge in the gaming space. So I got to imagine that you lived through that at Bally's.
It was everything, right? Like we knew in gaming when to send you a coupon to make it so you would come back without lapsing.
So with that said, I mean, you're changing the image, the brand really of not Bowlero, but also the idea of let's go bowling tonight, right? Because it's a different experience than you're just rolling a ball down the lane. It's all of that. So marketing has to be a huge component of all of this, which I can't remember if the bowling lanes in my town that I grew up in, I ever saw an advertisement from them ever. But I would imagine marketing is a huge, huge piece of your indirect spend.
Yeah. I mean, Tom bought Professional Bowlers Association, which plays a lot of hours on Fox. So keeps bowling fresh. But from a marketing perspective, we believe in returns. So we're only focused on performance marketing. We're not really focused on awareness marketing. So our marketing spend is not high, but our marketing spend is very efficient. As we update our technology more, and we know that if we offer you a $25 coupon, that will bring you in. We will spend more on marketing, but it will be driven by returns.
Were you a bowler growing up?
Hung out. I was one of those high school kids that like hung out at the bowling alley, but athletics has never been my forte.
So in a given week now, how often do you get out and go to a Bowlero or in a given month?
I mean, I'll hit a center a week when I'm not bowling. The only person I bowl with is my three-year-old. I am better than her, but I'm not great.
All right. So we have to go bowling. I actually bowled when I was in high school. It was my only way of getting out of work. I had to work with my dad after work. If I wasn't playing baseball or football, I had to work. So I took a bowling in the winter. Okay. So if we go bowling the next time we see each other and I bowl a 165, let's just say, how many pins do I need to spot you? Just have a close game.
60.
I'm going to go
golfing. My handicap's a little bit better.
We can do golf and bowling. Hey, listen, thanks for joining us. This has been fun. And I'll be watching Bowlero, actually going with my kids to Bowlero, I'm sure, again soon because they had a great time. But thanks for joining us. And to everybody who tuned in, until our next edition, my name is John Pavia, and this is Smarter Sourcing. Thanks, Bobby.
Thanks, John.
Thank you for listening to Smarter Sourcing. For more episodes, visit www.smartersourcing.com or search Smarter Sourcing on your podcast platform of choice.